Earl, would you lead us in prayer as we begin?
Dear God, our Father in heaven, we are appreciative of times such as these when we can come together and slow down and put all the cares and concerns of this life out of our minds and open your word and look into it and read and study and be reminded of things that we've maybe studied in the past, maybe learned some things that we did not know before. But in either case, take the things that we learn or have been reminded of and apply them to our lives that we might serve you in a way that honors you and benefits us. We ask you to be with Joe, be with the other teachers tonight, be with all of us who are studying together here tonight, and help us to benefit from this time together in Jesus' name.
Amen. All right, if we were to say, what are the epistles about? This is one way of maybe thinking about that. Here's just a little story. A wealthy man died with no heirs identified to receive his fortune. And within days, there's dozens of people that come to his attorney. They're all saying, I'm his child. And nothing's been identified ahead of time to say, here's my children, here are their names, and here's who I want my money to go to, or whatever. And so just imagine what this lawyer is going to go through, trying to figure out who are the rightful heirs. Who are the children of this man who died? It'd be a difficult task. Where would you even start? How would you try to figure that out? Well, in a similar way, God has determined that there is an inheritance for those who are his people. But how do you know who they are? I mean, there are many people who claim to be the children of God, but some are not. How do you know? Identifying the true children of God is John's task in these three letters. If you take an overview of what these epistles are about, what we can walk away with in the end, is a description of character of those that God identifies as his own. And let's rest assured that there are imposters along the way. And that one of the things that's making it difficult for those Christians long ago and for us today is that there are imposters saying, here's what a child of God looks like. Or there are just those who care nothing about being children of God who are trying to say things or influence us or teach doctrines that would lead us away from God. How do we know them? How do we identify them? What are the true characteristics of those who are children of God? That is what John is writing. And so tonight, we're going to kind of look through the epistles. First John primarily. And we're going to pick out some points that I think helps us to identify the children of God. And there'll be other points that could be made too. We're not touching on everything. But just some of the main ones that kind of rise to the top. That the children of God would be known by their faith. That it is faith that compels them to live a different life. John states his purpose very well in why he is writing. Let's go to 1 John. And kind of be prepared to work your way through 1 John primarily, looking at a number of passages to kind of start setting the premise and setting the foundation of our thoughts tonight. John states his purpose. 1 John chapter 5, verse 13. These things I have written to you who believe in the name of the Son of God, that you may know that you have eternal life, that you may continue to believe in the name of the Son of God. We could probably think of three or four points that stand out in that passage. We'll have a chance to talk about them as we go through the book. But we're just trying to make this point here at this time, you know, that the children of God will be known by their faith. And even that's why these things have been written. And isn't it interesting? It sounds so very much like what the Apostle John has written before. Remember what we just finished in John chapter 20, verse 30. And truly Jesus did many other signs in the presence of the disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, and that believing you may have life in his name. Sure sounds like what we read in 1 John 5, isn't it? But it sets this point right before us, that the children of God are identified by their faith. And it's not faith in just anything. It's not faith in just anybody. It's not faith in just any doctrine that comes along. That faith is very focused. It's narrow. It's faith that comes in the Son of God. And this is one of the identifying characteristics that we'll talk about a little bit more here in a few moments. But it's one of the things that John is putting out here before us, and it's going to be a repeated kind of a point throughout the epistles over and again. It's kind of interesting that I'm convinced John wants us to have, as he was writing this to Christians long ago, he was wanting those Christians to have confidence in what they believed and in what they were, who they were. And that we should have confidence. And our confidence in the faith that comes in Jesus Christ is not something that should be easily rattled. Even though there are those who want to rattle our faith. They want to destroy our faith. That's what they want. Let's just get to the point. You know, those that John would call the Antichrist. Oh, more discussion on that later. That's going to be the way that John kind of deals with some of them. You know, this effort to destroy our faith. In 1 John chapter 1, in the very beginning part of the letter, in verses 3 and 4, John says, "That which we have seen and heard, we declare to you, that you may also have fellowship with us, and truly our fellowship is with the Father and with his Son, Jesus Christ. And these things we write to you, that your joy may be." I get the impression through the epistles that there is a confidence that John has. That his faith is not going to be moved. His faith is not going to be scattered in any way. And he wants us to know that, and even the joy that comes with that. I'm not sure how to say this. It's not a point of pride that I'm trying to say, but I think that we should feel and find that when someone has tried to rattle our faith, but is unsuccessful, because they have no means to rattle our faith when we are determined and locked and solid in faith that comes from these words right here, there should be a certain joy that we find in that. That we are not easily moved. And I think, again, this is something that John's going to be writing about. That our faith is something that should be solid, confident, that we can be confident. A couple of points, John uses the word know, not know, but know, as in over 40 times in the epistles. He uses the word truth over 20 times, and it's a reoccurring theme or point, because he wants us to know how to recognize the true children of God. I mean, he drives the point over and over again. He is saying the same thing sometimes in different ways, a little bit like the Hebrew writer does. I mean, in Hebrews, I find very often that some of the same points being made over and over, but being stated in different ways. And maybe it didn't resonate with someone the first time it was said, but the second time, it was like, oh, yeah, I understand that. And yet there's someone who still didn't get it, but later it's said again in a different way, and someone says, I got that. And I feel that way a little bit with the epistles, that there are some of the same points made over and over, and then application being made in 2 John and 3 John, real-life applications being made to the points or principles that we find in 1 John. The word love is found over 50 times. in the epistles. Love was a word we found a lot in the Gospel of John too, wasn't it? But over 50 times in these short epistles right here. And we'll find that to be another characteristic that is exemplified in the true children of God. I mean, love, the characteristic of love, in different ways and aspects, is something that stands out as a characteristic in those who are truly children of God. There is a definite point of emphasis being made here. John's writing is written in such a way to probe our conscience, to reveal some important points. Whether or not we bear the image of the Father. Now, this is the point. This is the premise of the writing to me in so many ways. Yes, I know there's a lot of side points that are made, but here is the overall premise of the epistles. John is trying to identify for us the image, the characteristics, the nature of those who would be the true children of God. And what we have to see, what we need to determine in this, as we go through this study, we need to be looking at ourselves and saying, is that me? Is that who I am? And when we see our deficiencies, when we see our faults, we have to hit the reset and make what changes are needed so that in the end, that this is a description of who we are. That this is a definition of our faith and where it came from, and the foundation of our lives, a description of our character. I think there's a reason why John's writing this way. Because when you think about it, when we have a clear picture of the character of a disciple of Christ, it's pretty easy to spot someone who is not. I mean, it's just like the counterfeit bills. Some have talked about that before. How do you learn to know what's a counterfeit bill? Don't study the counterfeit. You study the real thing. And that's kind of what this is about. It's a description, it's a study of the character of a true disciple. And I hope in the end we learn some things about how we can improve our character. Our nature. And as we learn these things, when someone comes into our life in some way, who may be even saying they know Jesus, who may be saying even that they're a teacher of truth, but we learn as we listen to them some things that are different than what has been delivered, we'll spot it. I think there's a reason, or perhaps multiple reasons, why John is approaching these epistles this way, and why he's trying to teach and train the disciples in this way, in this manner. You know, the problem, maybe in the form of a question, what would we think to be the greatest challenge to the faith of these disciples? We might come up with several things that comes to our mind. You know, in our outline here, a couple of points that I put, is that, what about the persecution that they were facing? And if this was written in the time frame of 90 to 95 AD, we'll talk about that in lesson one. This is lesson minus one, I guess. We get to lesson one, we'll talk about the timing a little bit more. But let's say it was written about 90 or 95. Christians were already being persecuted. But, there was a lot more coming to in the very near future. But you could identify the problem and the concerns of persecution because it was right there. It was very real. It wasn't sublime. It wasn't hidden in any way. You know, when there was a Christian that was hanging on a stake and there was a fire built at their feet, you didn't have to wonder, well, I wonder what that's all about. No, you knew, you understood exactly. I mean, that there was no question what that was about. But it seems like some things that John is writing about are some things that are a little bit like, you know, under the radar. Issues that kind of slide in on you. Most of us that have been Christians for some time have had some experience with someone that we just really thought was maybe kind of solid in faith. And then in time, we start hearing some things they say that make us wonder, where are they coming from with that? And maybe in time, they say something again, you're wondering, I wonder if there's some other motives to that statement. And in time, well, it always comes out in time, doesn't it? And in time, their real motivation becomes known. But sometimes the damage is already done. There's already been some who have been influenced by some things that they have said that's not truth, that is not right. But they kind of snuck in on us. I mean, some of us have seen that before. And I think what John is trying to deal with is some things that doesn't stand out there like persecution. Would there have been reason to have fear of persecution? Well, I would have been afraid. Yes, I would have been afraid of the persecution that was coming upon these Christians. But you know, John doesn't really have a whole lot to say about that. In fact, I don't know that he says anything about the persecution. And it was real. And yet what he makes some real focus on is perversion of truth. That's where his focus is. And so it's kind of interesting when you think about what was the most critical thing that Christians were facing in that time. You know, seemingly it was not persecution and being burned at a stake. One of the biggest issues that these Christians were having to face and deal with was their faith going to endure? Was their faith as strong as it should be? Would there be some who come along who teach doctrines that would carry them away? Would somehow society and whatever society offers that diminish their character in such a way that they no longer look like Christ? Because he's going to say some things, he's going to say a lot of things about the character of Christ and his nature. And then John's going to make the point that if you don't love the way Christ loves, then you're not one of his. He's going to make statements such as that. And so his concern then has a whole lot more to do, not with the persecution of being burned at the stake, but his concern is more in line with the ideas of somehow our faith being destroyed. That somehow in a subtle way even, that there are influences that change us in such a way that we can no longer be identified as the people of God. Remember our example at the beginning. The wealthy man who dies but doesn't leave a list of those who inherit something from him, his heirs. We should be able to look at ourselves as being heirs of God. That there is an inheritance for those who are the people of God. But how will we be identified? How does God know that we belong to him? It'll be determined by us. By how we live. By our character. Our nature. That's what John is writing about. That's what he is writing about.
Paul warns us over and over about false teachings and false teachers. Mm-hmm. John is now telling us what the consequences mm-hmm. of that are.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Peter did as well, warning about false teachers, false prophets, false apostles, false doctrines, you know, that were going to be coming upon them. I'm looking at it more now. Most would believe that this is one of the last writings among the apostles. And I think now we're looking at a time where these things have already happened. You know, and now he's writing to warn about the influences of the apostasy that's all around. And you know, how will God identify? You know, like we said, persecution was obvious. You had a clear choice to make because persecution was easy to see. The compromising of truth has a way of encroaching our minds in a restrained way that we cannot see the danger unless we are looking for it. Some people left the church because they taught a different message than the apostles. Look at a couple of passages here. Let's see, I'm on the right page. I think we're coming up on it here. Like 1 John chapter 2. Let's look at several passages. 1 John chapter 2. And verse 19. We're just going to kind of run from one to another here just a little bit. John says, he's talking about some deceptions that would come upon us. He says, they went out from us, but they were not of us. For if they had been of us, they would have continued with us, but they went out that they might be made manifest, and none of them were of us. Phew, I got that point. Made it over and over again. You know, they left us. They went out from us. But they should have. They weren't a part of us anyway. I mean, like three times he says, they were not a part of us. You know, a point of emphasis, we would say. You know, the idea that some left because they taught a different message than the apostles. I get a clear picture here that if you did not teach what the apostles were teaching, you were sorted out. I mean, you were known because of that. And these false teachers were relentless in that their intent was to draw others away. Chapter 2, verse 26. These things I have written to you concerning those who try to deceive you. But there'd be no question here what he's talking about. Hey, some are trying to take you out. Some are trying to fool you. There are those trying to deceive you. Chapter 4, verse 1. Beloved, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits whether they are of God, because many false prophets have gone out into the world. We'll find it over and again, as we mentioned a few minutes ago. John's message is repeated. It's kind of, some have said it's a circular kind of message, that he'll say the same thing over and over again in a little bit different way. There's a point of emphasis that's being placed in that. It appears some traveled from church to church with their message. Going back to chapter 2 again and verse 18. Little children, it is the last hour, and as you have heard that the Antichrist is coming, even now many Antichrists have come, by which we know that it is the last hour. They went out from us, but they were not of us. For if they had been of us, they would have continued with us, but they went out that they might be made manifest that none of them were with us. 2 John chapter 7, or verse 7. 2 John.
Well, you're here on verse 18.
Yeah. There's some pretty fantastic ideas about there as to what or who is the Antichrist. And we'll talk about that more when we get into chapter 2. But it's an interesting point to think about this as we get into it. I mean, some have tried to depict leaders of nations or leaders of religions like the Pope, leaders of nations, or even nations as being the Antichrist, you know. And even great debates over who is the Antichrist, as though there's one. Well, I think there is one leader, one source of those who choose to follow. you know, but there could be many. I think is the point, is antichrists, as in plural, you know, right here. But that just adds emphasis to what he's saying, doesn't it?
But then you go back to the father of lies perpetrated.
Exactly right. That's right. Speaking of Satan,
right.
You know, the father of lies. Exactly right. Exactly right. In 2 John, in verse 7, continuing thing, another letter, different letter, but this is in verse 7, for many deceivers have gone out into the world who do not confess Jesus Christ is coming in the flesh. And this is a deceiver and an antichrist. Again, another antichrist. And he identifies another issue, that there are some who say Jesus never even came in the flesh. Here's a whole other issue, another doctrine that comes up. And so, you know, the teaching, the point here that John is making, is that the teaching differed from apostolic teaching. And there's two major areas here that I would make a point on. I'm sure there's other points we could make too. But again, trying to take this macro view of the epistles, two things that just seem to really float to the top. You know, that they're teaching different from apostolic teaching in two major ways. In what is the nature of Christ, and what is the nature of his children? I mean, there would be some who would argue, as we just read, would even deny Christ. And some who would deny that he came in the flesh. And some would come to a point of even saying, well, it doesn't matter how you live. There'd be some who's saying that all material things are evil, and you're of the flesh, that you're evil. There's not a thing that you can do. There's not a thing you can't change your life. Just live however you'd like to live. It doesn't really matter anyway. It'll come to that point. But still, it comes back to this basic premise right here. You know, that there were those who rejected that Jesus was the Christ. 1 John chapter 2, verse 22. Who is a liar but he who denies that Jesus is the Christ? He is Antichrist who denies the Father and the Son. We get a little glimpse of the day in which John was living and these Christians. That there were those in that day even who were saying, but Jesus never was. And of course, when John begins the writing of this epistle, which we'll look at more later, of course, again, he says what he said in the Gospel of John, I was there. I was with him. I saw these things. I was a witness. I am giving testimony of what I saw. And yet, John's saying, there's those who deny Christ ever lived. There are those who say Christ was never in the flesh. And so he's saying, beware. There are those who are trying to deceive you, these who are antichrists. And so he's making this point. So that there are those who reject the nature of Christ and denied that Christ came in the flesh. Chapter 4, verse 1, beginning. Beloved, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits, whether they of God are of God, because many false prophets have gone out into the world. By this you know the Spirit of God. Every spirit that confesses Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is of God. And every spirit that does not confess that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is not of God. And this is the spirit of the Antichrist, which you have heard was coming, and even now it is already in the world. So here, I mean, big distinction is being made. Those who confess Christ, those who deny Christ, or even deny that he was even in the world, even to that point or that degree. So there are those who deny the nature of Christ. But the second point in this macro view is those who deny or confuse the nature of God's children. The nature of God's children. Okay, so there are those who rejected that Jesus was the Christ. Chapter 2, verse 22 again. Who is he, or who is a liar, but he who denies that Jesus is the Christ? He is an antichrist who denies the Father and the Son. And there are those again, I'm on the wrong point. Why don't you tell me that? I'm saying the whole thing over again. This is the next point, which is the next one down. False teachers did not really put a high premium on obeying God's commands. I mean, if you're a false teacher, you're not going to emphasize any of God's commands. You're teaching things contrary to that. And you're not going to teach what is the nature of God's children. In 1 John chapter 2, verse 3 begins. And by this we know him, if we keep his commandments. He who says, I know him, and does not keep his commandments, is a liar, and the truth is not in him. But whoever keeps his word, truly the love of God is perfected in him. By this we know that we are in him. There's a point of joy or a point of confidence that we can know that we are in him. Also, we can know those who are not. Oh, you can't judge that way. Wait a minute. What did John say? John's making a judgment here. John's making a judgment that we can know those who walk with the Lord and we can know those who do not. And when someone is saying, I know Jesus, when someone is saying, you know, I have faith, when someone is saying, I'm a Christian, but are not keeping and following the commandments of God, there's a judgment we can make. No, you're not. And there's a reason John is telling them this, telling us this, that we're not fooled, that we're not deceived. Because we live in a day now where there are many who say they are Christians. There are many who say they are saved. There are those who say it doesn't matter what church you go to, doesn't matter what doctrine you follow, doesn't matter what doctrine you believe, but we are all one in God's sight. We will all be saved as long as we are Christian. That doesn't follow along at all what the apostle just said. He is drawing a line of distinction that is being made. And we cannot be seen as being in the realm of the nature of the children of God if we are not willing to make that distinction. There are so many that say, you're just being too judgmental about this thing. Who put you in a position of making judgment? How do you know the hearts of people, whether they are Christian or not? All we've got to do is listen to what the Apostle John has to say. He is sorting these things out. And we think, well, I mean, today this is a real issue. Let me tell you something. I don't think it was any less of an issue in 90 AD. That's why he's writing these things. Because there were those who were trying to deceive. There were those who were trying to water down the gospel of Christ. There were those who were trying to say, it doesn't really matter what you believe. There were those Gnostics who were saying, well, all material things are evil and your body is flesh, and so your body is just evil. You can just do whatever you want. It doesn't matter how you live. You know, we live in a time now where there are those who basically would teach that same doctrine today, right? You know, nothing new under the sun. And we struggle with how do we deal with that? John tells us right here how to deal with that. I mean, in such very simple terms is what we find right here. He who says, I know him, and does not keep his commandments is a liar. You know, that's a lot harsher language than I've used. I've said sometimes those who follow doctrines, Christian doctrines, that are different from what we read here, well, they just don't understand. And you know, they've not been taught. And, well, their hearts might be sincere, but they just don't understand. John says, those who say, I know him, but do not keep his commandments, is a liar, and the truth is not in him. We talk about cutting to the chase. You know, I mean, that's just, the old preacher says, we shelled the corn today. And that's what John did. And we just got right down to the point right there. And again, there's a reason why John is saying these things. There's a reason why he repeats these points through the epistles. There's a reason why he makes application in 2 John and 3 John, so we can understand. So there'll be no confusion. So that our knowledge will be what it needs to be. So that our confidence will be built up in such a way that when the deceiver comes along, we say, you're not going to fool me. No, what you're teaching is not true. Here's the proof. That's what John's trying to do. And not just to those disciples 2,000 years ago, but for us today. It's the same doctrine. It's the same truth that will embolden our faith. That's what John is trying to do. Well, time is going here. Quick.
You have to appreciate John for not being politically correct, but telling us God's truth.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Salvation depends on it. Then and now. It's not any different. God willing, on Sunday, I want to make this overview of the epistles before we get into the chapter-by-chapter study. And I hope you're going to find this to be helpful. The Lord willing, we'll try to take up here on Sunday. Thank you for listening so well.